KFSR presents Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, featuring stories of people of the valley, produced by media communications and journalism students at Fresno State, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning, I'm Alexis Govea.
And I'm Tristan Lewis. We're glad you joined us this morning for Fresno State Focus Radio Edition. Stories about people of the Central Valley. Today, we'll hear from presidential historian Doris Kearns Goodwin, who visited Fresno State recently to talk about the presidential election.
We're going to find out about a program that encourages schools over prisons. And we'll go to the fields where food insecurity is a cause for concern.
Then we'll pick things back up with a couple of athletes. One former Bulldog who signed a hefty contract with the NBA. And a swimmer who has her eye on Tokyo 2020.
We'll begin with the presidential election. Politics has been on the forefront for many people with the craziness associated with the upcoming election. Fresno State President Joseph Castro is trying to help the Fresno community sort out the details by bringing in nationally known speakers. I had the opportunity to talk with the most recent speaker, presidential historian and Pulitzer Prize winner Doris Kearns Goodwin.
And we are so pleased that you are here tonight.
President Castro brought out author Doris Kearns Goodwin to Fresno State to educate the campus and the community on politics and the upcoming presidential election.
Tonight, we are honored to have Doris Kearns Goodwin, America's historian-in-chief, as our guest speaker. What do you think of that? She will provide a uniquely valuable and insightful perspective regarding the current presidential election.
Goodwin is a presidential historian and Pulitzer Prize-winning author. She was assistant to former President Lyndon B. Johnson during and after his presidency.
But indeed, Johnson would have a valid argument, for my fascination with the presidency, as the president said, no doubt took root when I was a 24-year-old White House fellow to Lyndon Johnson. When I was selected, we had a big dance at the White House. There was a lot of dancing with me with president, not that peculiar. There were only three women out of the 16 White House fellows. But as he twirled me around the floor, he whispered that he wanted me to be assigned directly to him in the White House.
Before Goodwin was a presidential fan, she was a baseball fan. She and her father spent many hours watching games together. Later, she was a sports journalist, making a name for herself as the first woman to enter the Boston Red Sox locker room.
Her love for history began as a young girl when she would describe in great detail to her father the baseball game that she listened to earlier in the day. And that inspired this incredible career as a historian.
As a presidential historian, Goodwin has lived through some of the most exciting world events and presidencies.
That for five decades, I have lived with presidents who are no longer alive. I've awakened with them in the morning, I go to sleep thinking about them at night, and I've loved every minute of this work.
What are your thoughts overall, the way it's panning out right now, the election so far?
Oh, I think everybody will be glad when it's over. I mean, it's been wild, it's been crazy, it's been an adventure. People have talked about it, people have felt connected to it. But in the end, it hasn't been uplifting, I think, on either side in a certain sense. So I think, you know, finally it's been going on, it seems, forever. I think people will feel a breath of relief. Finally, we can talk about something else.
According to a CNN ORC poll of debate watchers, Hillary Clinton won the final presidential debate. The U.S. presidential election of 2016 will be on Tuesday, November 8th. November 8th, that's right around the corner. It'll be interesting to see the way the election plays out.
Yeah, it seems like everybody has opinions on what's going to happen. Either you see it through Twitter, Facebook, just everybody wants to know what's going on. The Schools Not Prisons Tour recently made a stop at Fresno City College. Many different organizations got together to raise awareness about what the state is spending money on. Brittany Sosa was there for the event and has a story.
Hashtag Schools Over Prison is a free music and art tour that travels up and down California to areas with schools in need. This tour was created to raise awareness on who California sends to prisons and how that spending can affect investments in education, health, and other community needs.
Well, this is a tour that's going on throughout California, and I believe they're doing 9 stops for the Schools Not Prison Tour.
This year, they made a stop in Fresno, and had their tour set up at Fresno City College, bringing over 600 people to the event.
You know, a lot of groups were doing work around imprisonment, and, you know, so that's where the collaboration came about, where people were trying to figure out how to do a big push with, like, young people and artists who were all kind of engaged together.
This tour brings together many different organizations that help support our youth and give them a voice. One group's name is Culture Strike, a nonprofit organization that's based out of Oakland, California.
So Culture Strike is an arts nonprofit. We're based in Oakland, but we do national work. Our main point is to work with artists that do pro-migrant artwork. And that means, you know, writers, that means filmmakers, that means visual artists.
Their goal is to change the narrative around criminalization of immigrants and stop them from being imprisoned.
I'm undocumented myself, and you can say that. Being undocumented and being in this situation, the way that the government treats me like a criminal, right? Like, I shouldn't have rights. I shouldn't be able to live my life. And so I think that through art, it's super important to take back those narratives.
The way Culture Strike tries to get their message out to the youth is by art. Another organization that was at the Fresno tour was Dulce Up Front.
My group is called Dulce Up Front, and we do production here in Fresno. We're collaborating with them. They're basically from LA and based organization, but it's statewide. You know, the collaborators, we're partnering with, like, the California Endowment and a bunch of different organizations. Basically, it came about. They were touring. They seeing what we were doing in town. We do a lot of community work, multi-generational events, and we just got on board to represent Fresno.
This tour will stop in 9 California areas this year. The artists, along with many different partners, are standing up for a new vision, investing in youth, community safety, health, and education, serious matters. Many volunteers have dedicated their time to help with the event all around California.
I guess I decided to volunteer because, like, I grew up in a poor neighborhood where, like, a lot of the folks I knew growing up wound up, like, going, either dropping out of school or going, like, straight from school, like, into, like, doing crime and, like, winding up in prison, and, like, the school system never really seemed to be on their side. So it's kind of, like, an issue that's, like, always been, like, very close to home.
Many different voices, many different stories that each person has. Being a volunteer means giving back to those who need help and standing up for those who don't have a voice. A project manager from a nonprofit, Ana Maria Baez Torres, told us how she got started giving back.
I finished high school. I had some rough times. That's why I'm so passionate about helping and giving back, because I could have just been a statistic. And so, fortunately, I wasn't.
According to the California Endowment, the state spends on average $62,000 a year to keep one inmate in prison, and another $9,000 on students per year. Money, the endowment says, could be better used for students. This is Brittany Sosa, Fresno State Focus Radio Edition.
As the harvest season comes to a close, many people are beginning to wonder where their next meal is going to come from. Edmer Archila tells us how some families are dealing with the food insecurity.
In this field in Merced County, there are different crops. Tomatoes on one side of the road, cotton on the other. One of them is now just barren land. The other is ready to be picked and hauled to be sold and will too be empty of plants. It's something many people face after the harvest season. Many jobs end, and in this area, there aren't any machines or people around. Traveling east into Madera County, I find myself at Shepherd's Temple Church, a food distribution site just outside of Chowchilla. Here, people line up inside their cars to receive food assistance, a drive-thru of sorts. Porfirio Torres is an agricultural laborer who is no longer employed for the season. He shares his frustration.
Sí, pues andamos en el tiempo de la pizca de la uva.
Well, we're harvesting grapes. There are sometimes like 3 or 4 weeks in harvest. Right now, the ranchers are finding ways to use machines instead of people to make the harvest of grapes easier. And the weather, too, doesn't last for us to work anymore.
Elsewhere in this dirt parking lot, cars wait their turn, As one car leaves, the next one in line parks just outside a small shed. That's where volunteers unpack pallets of food, sort it out, and place the food in shopping carts to be wheeled off to a waiting car. Abigail Galicia just received her food. She says receiving food assistance helps keep food on her table while she continues to find work.
Oh, well, it's once a month, and there's other places that also help out, so it really comes in handy when you know, you're struggling a little bit, when you have no work, and really, it's a blessing.
As Galicia was receiving the food, the person wheeling the cart to her is Joyce Scholes.
We almost always have fruits and vegetables. Okay, then we almost always have drink. And then there are chips, salsa, potatoes, onions, like I said, the fruits and vegetables. But they try to, like, you know, give us like healthy things and fruits and vegetables that are in season. So we'll pretty much have a good variety of things come through.
The food comes from Community Food Bank in Fresno. They provide food for different communities, including Shepherd's Temple Church. In this industrial building where food comes in by the truckload, we find Maria Ayala.
Community Food Bank is a public nonprofit organization. We serve five counties here in the Central Valley. That includes Fresno, Madera, Kings, Tulare, and Kern. And so we are, you know, really our focus is making sure that that people are, you know, have food. The insecurity rate here in the Central Valley is one of the highest in the country. And so our responsibility, you know, is to do our best to acquire food, to then work with local partner organizations to get that food out to the community.
As for food insecurity, Ayala says it's much higher here than in other parts of the country.
Across the nation, the food insecurity rate is 1 in 7. So that means that 1 in 7 individuals is experiencing hunger in any given day. Here locally in the Central Valley, it's actually 1 in 4. So our insecurity rate, our food insecurity rate is actually a lot higher than it is across the country.
Ayala also says that partnering organizations like Shepherd's Temple Church is important to getting food out to people.
Community Food Bank currently has an existing network of 220 partner agencies. These partner agencies are organizations who are nonprofits themselves. A majority of them are faith-based, and that faith-based organizations really represent pretty much every denomination, every religion, which is great. And we also have some non-faith-based organizations that are more community-based, existing organizations. Some of these you already are familiar with, the Salvation Army, Catholic Charities, Poverello House. Those are kind of, you know, the bigger names here that most people will be familiar with. But then that also, it includes some of our smaller community churches that, you know, maybe serve the, you know, their neighbors around them. And so that's really the way that we get food out. We wouldn't be able to get as much food out as we do if it were not for these partners.
And for a father like Santiago Blanco, who was also able to receive food, he says it definitely helps feed the family.
Oh, it's a lot of help, because when you have family and you pay rent, bills, and everything else, and there isn't any work, it's a lot of help, not just for me, but I think for others that are here too.
If you'd like more information on Community Food Bank and their food distribution dates and locations, you can visit communityfoodbank.net. Edmar Chila, Fresno State Focus, Radio Edition.
Especially with the upcoming holidays, it's great to see that there are food banks to assist people.
Yeah, I never really thought about what happens with farm families after the harvest season ends.
Former Fresno State Bulldog Tyler Johnson has become one of the most intriguing players in the NBA. David Chavez got the chance to speak with the Miami Heat guard about his journey to the NBA.
While Tyler Johnson was going through Fresno State as a shooting guard, he was keeping a close eye on Paul George, who graduated 4 years before he did.
He was definitely somebody I looked up to coming out of school because of the success that he was able to have. You know, it's very humbling to have somebody who came before you to kind of show you what route to take.
Johnson played for Fresno State from 2010 to 2014. He started 87 out of 127 games, averaging 10.6 points. He finished number 16 on the all-time scoring list. When it came time for the NBA draft, his name didn't get called.
After I graduated, I ended up making the summer league team for the Heat. Just from there, I was invited to go to training camp, and then I was one of the last two cuts from making the final roster that year.
What happened to Johnson is typical. Thousands of athletes dream of making it from collegiate to professional sports, but only a fraction of them make it. In 2015, of nearly 19,000 male basketball players, only 46 were drafted to the NBA. That's less than 0.25%. Johnson wound up playing for the Heat's D-League team in South Dakota. As an undrafted player, he had to prove he was ready for the next level. The Miami Heat called him up. He didn't get a chance to play and got sent back down. But then the Miami Heat called him again.
It was a proud moment for not only myself, but, you know, the people who were around me to support me. You know, I had a baby when I was in college with my now fiance, Ashley, and we were able to go through all those things together. And, you know, along with, you know, my mother and my siblings, I think I was happier because I was able to make them proud.
It didn't take long for Johnson to start contributing. The Heat were in the middle of finishing the season strong in preparation for the playoffs. The Heat roster boasted some of the most talented players in the league.
I'm blessed because a lot of people who come into the league don't get the opportunity to play with who you would consider Hall of Famer. It was an honor to be able to play with Dwayne. You know, Chris, we get closer, we'll see when he comes back. But definitely an honor anytime you get to play next to a Hall of Famer.
This summer, two events happened that will not only impact Johnson, but his family and the city of Miami as well. The Brooklyn Nets offered Johnson a $50 million contract. The Heat matched that offer.
I kind of got sick to my stomach just hearing that number, knowing that, you know, I was able to be in a position to take care of my family the way I wanted to. It was just an overwhelming experience. I'm blessed to be able to go through it, but I'm glad that whole process is behind me and I can just look forward to playing basketball.
With the departure of Dwayne Wade moving from Miami to Chicago and the uncertainty of Chris Bosh's playing future, Johnson will be looked upon to perform at a high level every night.
My role is definitely going to increase. I think for me, it's to continue doing what I'm doing when I was healthy, is, you know, whether it be making shots or, you know, running the point, get everybody organized, and then, you know, as well as being a defender.
Miami Heat head coach Eric Spoelstra says he likes what he's seen out of Johnson so far and says there's still much to come from him.
Tyler, how I describe him is he's a winner who finds a way to win. He's got an incredible work ethic. I think that's why the Heat fan base loves Tyler so much, and they should. He's reflective of the work ethic of this community. He puts in the time. He's tireless with his work ethic. He's coachable. He has a great desire to get better, and he's turned himself into a heck of a pro. But again, with Tyler, I'm not going to put a ceiling on him because of his competitiveness, because of his work ethic, his commitment to want to be great. You know, who knows where he can be this year.
During the season, Johnson followed closely what the Fresno State men's basketball team was doing and tuned in during the Mountain West conference run.
I was excited. I wasn't able to watch, but keeping up on the game cast when they were playing San Diego State in the championship for the Mountain West.
Johnson credits Paul George for paving the way for others like him who may not come from elite programs like Kentucky, Duke, or Kansas. George made sure to give Johnson a call.
Yeah, I congratulated him after he got the deal. And we spoke a little bit. I'm happy for him. He came into this league off talent, and, you know, he's made a mark in this league now. You know, he should be here for some time. So I'm really, 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 really proud of what Tyler has become.
Johnson keeps in contact with recent Bulldog graduates Marvell Harris, Cesar Guerrero, and Julian Lewis. He says he hopes his story is an example that hard work pays off.
You stay with it. I mean, I was knocked down by when I was first cut from, you know, the Heat training camp roster. So, you know, you just have to stay with it because, you know, you never know what kind of opportunity is going to be out there, is going to present itself. It's better to be ready and never get the opportunity than to get the opportunity and not be ready.
Fresno State head basketball coach Rodney Terry coached Johnson for 3 years and says he is not surprised that he has made a name for himself at the next level. Johnson is grateful for his time at Fresno State and for the opportunity to have played for a program with so much history.
I think you just think of the tradition that they've had there back in the days of, you know, Tark and Boyd and them, and even Cleveland. Everybody who talks about Fresno State basketball talks about those days and all the great players who came before us. So, I mean, it means a lot to be able to wear that jersey. I'm glad that it's starting to find its way back to the national map.
This is David Chavez, Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, KFSR.
Johnson's story really is an amazing example of how hard work can truly pay off, and it can be an inspiration to many who aspire to be a ball player.
Plus, it's pretty cool that he comes from Fresno State as well. All across the country, universities are hosting students from different countries. And here at Fresno State, we are no different. Today, we talked to a Lithuanian student who tells us all about life back home and the differences from here to there.
Oh my goodness. Ugne? Mazutatite.
When students from different countries come to Fresno State, you might expect them to say that their favorite thing about being here could be the food or entertainment. What is Ugna Majutatitas?
My favorite part is when no one can say my last name.
Mazutatite.
Majutatita is from Lithuania. This is the 19-year-old's second year at Fresno State, and it is pronounced Majutatita, for those of you who are still trying to figure out how the heck to say her last name. Now imagine this. You just moved from your home to a school that is in a different country you've never been to before. Pretty scary, huh?
I would notice how they would get in a conversation, they would talk at school about something that I don't know. And that's what they grew up with. Let's say Cheerios or like a cereal. They would talk about cereal that I've never eaten because we didn't have that choice back in Lithuania. We don't have this product. Or the culture is really different. In here, it's respect, it's family, it's the American dream. Back home, it's not like this.
It seems strange at first, but as time went on, Majutatita started to enjoy the new and different.
I can see the difference, but I like it here. I like that I can see other cultures, and since the Fresno is so diverse, you can see everyone from all the different parts of the world, and it's really interesting to you kind of learn from it. Yeah.
I want you to think again about living in a different country and going to a school, but now imagine being a student athlete too. Majutatita is part of the Fresno State women's swimming and diving team.
I always wanted to come to California and swim for a school.
She specializes in the 100 and 200 yard backstroke. Majutatita began swimming when she was just 5 years old. It was something that she was just born into.
My dad, he was a head coach both in the Lithuanian national team. My mom was my coach. First, I started swimming at my grandmother's, so pool was with the place where all my dad, my mom, my grandmother, my grandfather would be.
As time went on, Majutatita was able to capture two Lithuanian national records, one in the 200 backstroke and the other in the 100 backstroke. She definitely left her mark in her home country. But what about at Fresno State? This past year, she won the 200 backstroke and took third in the 100 backstroke at Mountain West Championships.
I remember when I touched the wall, I'm like, okay, now we're talking. Now that's the next year and the next year. I knew that all the competitions, big stuff is happening to me.
As well, she was named Freshman of the Year at the Mountain West Championships. She was also the only Fresno State swimmer the past season to compete in the NCAAs.
It was a big, huge honor to be a Fresno State swimmer coming. Like, yeah, I'm from Fresno State and I'm here.
Because of the success she has had in the past year, she's someone that her team just looks up to. Teammates just like Kaylee Conlin note Majutatita as a source of motivation during practice.
Oh, Ugna's always pushing me at practice. She's really good at freestyle and backstroke, so like I pace off of her a lot with freestyle when we have to do like longer sets. Also, her backstroke is so fast that sometimes she'll do backstroke while other people do freestyle, and we're just like, wow, Ugna, okay.
However, when she first came to the United States, it took some getting used to adjusting to swim practices here. For starters, Majutatita was not used to the camaraderie that came with being on a team.
Because I came from, again, from Lithuania, where we still had a team, but since Lithuania is so small, so you would get to see your friends that live in a different city, and you don't really have that team building things. Like, we never do team building, and in here it's team retreats, team building, we have songs, a team cheer. We would never do that back home.
But thanks to those team building exercises and retreats, Majutatita has gotten really close to the other Bulldog swimmers and can't imagine life without them.
My teammates, they're like my sisters, so I have 29 sisters. Well, 30 sisters, because I have a sister back home.
Her teammates have helped make it easier to adjust to a new place and different norms. Samantha Gianetta is one of those teammates who helped welcome Madrid Tatita and helped her adapt to life in the U.S., whether it was driving her to Target to get groceries or even giving her tips on the correct way to exit a pool after a race.
Like, when she first came, we had to tell her, like, you can't get out on the side. You have to get out in your lane or else you'll get disqualified. So it was like an adjustment there.
A lot of little things just like that were different in American swimming compared to Lithuanian swimming.
They swim indoors and we don't. So it's kind of different for backstrokers because when you swim indoors, you can look at the ceiling so you know when you're going straight.
But Maju Tatita was quick to learn.
She's well adjusted to going straight down the middle of the lane, even though she can't see the ceiling.
While there was something she was forced into learning, she's also wanted to try new things and get a taste of different cultures. When she came to Fresno State, she decided to give the vegan lifestyle a try and live solely on a plant-based diet. She was also very determined to learn a new language.
I'm taking Japanese. Pretty tough, not gonna lie. Broke me a couple times, but I really respect my professor. She's really tough, and that's what I like about her.
Learning Japanese kind of came as a shock to her teammates and her coaches.
And all of us were just kind of like, what? Because, you know, all of us typically here were like business majors and like athletic majors and just like stuff that revolves around what like we do.
It was tough at first, but the more and more she worked at it, the better she got.
Ugin is a super like committed person in and out of the classroom.
Studying and schoolwork is something that helps Maju Tatita get her mind off of swimming. It's a way she's able to relax and reset.
I really like studying. It's not something that I'm forced to do or, okay, I'm studying just because I want to get a scholarship or something. No, it's something that I really enjoy doing.
However, back in Lithuania, there are some who have the mindset that swimming should come first, then education. People thought that when Maju Tatita moved to the U.S., she would start studying more and become slower in her times. But those perceptions didn't seem to derail her from getting an education. She's seen what happens to those who turn pro at an early age.
They would compete for like 10 years and then they would just not know what to do with their life and basically not, I guess, live a happy life, not knowing who they really are. So studying is really important to get an education, to realize who I am, to realize who I want to be, what I want in life.
Even though school is pretty important to her, Maju Tatita still has a lot of expectations and goals in the next couple of years. This December, she plans on competing in the World Short Course Nationals in Canada. Next, in summer 2017, she wants to represent Lithuania at World Long Course Championships and be able to swim in the semifinal. But an even bigger goal she has is to be able to push her team in the top 6 or top 5 at the next Mountain West Conference Championship.
Our team is just getting better and better every second, so it's really nice to see as a whole team getting better, and the goal is as a team to achieve.
Whatever happens this year, I'm sure this will not be the last we hear of Maju Tatita. Her overall objective is when 2020 comes around, she wants to be able to compete in her very first Olympics at Tokyo.
That's the reason I'm learning Japanese. That is my ultimate goal, to go to Tokyo Olympics and to compete, represent Lithuania.
Maju Tatita is one of many different international students on campus who provides so many cool stories and personalities. So go out and meet someone new, because you'll never know who will surprise you and be one of the greatest athletes in their home country. She was such a cool interview to do. You'd have never noticed just by looking at her that she was vegan, she knows Japanese, and she holds 2 national records in her home country.
Yeah, just like you had mentioned, go out and meet someone new because you never know what type of information they're going to provide you with. I love learning those fun facts, especially she's an athlete from another country and you would have never known how great she was until, you know, you probably did that interview, right?
Yeah, even on this campus though, we're such a diverse campus, it's so awesome to see all the different types of students. Next week on Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, Talia Arredondo will take a look at some of the things students can do to cope with homesickness. It's a real problem, especially for freshmen.
And Tyler Bartlam will be back from Sacramento with a special report on Next Gen Radio.
Fresno State Focus Radio Edition is produced by Professor Faith Sidlow. Our stories and interviews are produced and edited by Brittany Sosa, Edmer Archila, David Chavez, Talia Arredondo, Tyler Bartlam, and Judith Saldivar. Natalie Nigg is our associate producer.
This program is produced in collaboration with KFSR 90.7 FM. For Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, I'm Alexis Govea.
And I'm Tristan Lewis. Have a great morning.
KFSR presents Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, Saturday mornings at 5. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.